Mr. Forbes, Reel 7. We're talking about overnight lagers, particularly the early phase around about Operation Epsom. And you were just saying how they had a South African war, South African basis, origin. So what exactly would happen? You'd lay, they'd be laid out in a square.
Yeah. And naturally, the army always had to sort of designate guards, people to do guard duty and things like that. But most of the time you were busy because you had to replenish your ammunition and your petrol. And you had sometimes to wait till the echelon, the view echelon, came up with the petrol wagon and the ammunition wagon. And that was mainly what happened when you got in.
How would you go about refueling? It would arrive in cans, would it?
Yeah.
Jerry cans or whatever.
Well, it was jerry cans eventually, but I think, yes, it was jerry cans. The old expendable tin cans had gone by this time, I think.
So how would you do it? I mean, how would they bring up the petrol to you?
Well, it just came up in trucks and they just went round the square and filled up each tank of it. You had a big square funnel, which was very easily... It was quite an easy job to fill up, and you just filled up until the petrol reached the top and you could see it, and then you just put it.
So basically you just opened the tin, the jerry can, and poured it in.
That's right, yeah.
And you'd do that, would you, as driver, with the co-driver?
You all had to muck in, you know, the guns as possible had to be cleaned, and sometimes if there'd been a lot of firing, the barrel would be worn and we would have to put in a new barrel, all these sort of things. Came up on the echelon.
Would you help the gunner with if they needed a new barrel or something?
I think he would help for cleaning the guns and that. The whole idea is that you muck in. You don't just sit back and say it's your job and then like that. None of that went on. You just all mucked in.
And the guard duties, what would they be like?
A bit daft, really, because you had infantry built all around about you, but you just walked around, walked back and forward on the particular line of tanks that you were on, and did nothing really. Hoped that nothing would happen, and you would get a wee bit of sleep when they came off. But we never had much sleep at night because of the things you had to do.
And you've got a new crew. What was the new crew?
No, that's a point. I can't remember who I got in with. It must have been...
Why was your old crew broken up? I mean, because couldn't you just got a new crew commander? But
well, it's just that when you went in, if there was any casualties, they needed to fill up tanks, and they just swapped around, more or less. If somebody needed a gunner... I'm sorry that my memory is
in your notes. It's got you found yourself in a crew, Sergeant Shaw.
He became crew commander. Yeah.
Would that be then, or because you've got Shaw, Moyer, Mathers,
Andy Mathers, and Bert Shaw and Bertie Moyer. That's right, yeah. I must have got in tow with them, because later on we had to bail out with them.
And what was Sergeant Shaw like? Do you know his first name?
Bert. Albert, it was Albert or Herbert or Robert, I'm not sure.
But and what was he like?
He was... I don't like saying anything against him, but we didn't get on too well. He wasn't... We were used to a friendly chappy like McCarthy, and it wasn't easy handling him. He was a wee bit, I've got this and you haven't.
His stripes.
He was a wee bit like that.
Was he a good tank commander?
I wouldn't say the best, no.
We'll perhaps come to that when you're in action. Now, the other ones you've got in your notes were Bert Moyer. What was he? Was he the gunner or the wireless operator?
He was a gunner, Bert. He was a tallish, lanky sort of chap. Very good, easy to get on with. Lack of vertical maybe in a way, but a typical fifer, I would say, Bert was. He had a lot of, in his accent, his fife accent was strong.
Was he an original or then from Fife?
Yeah, I think he was one of the TA original.
And then was he Andy Mathers, your wireless operator?
He was the same, he was a fighter as well.
And he was the wireless operator, was he?
He was the wireless operator.
What was he like?
He wasn't bad, really. He came in, that's right, he came in when Pat, when he got promoted, Pat got promoted to Corporal. So we needed a wireless operator. So Andy came on, and I can't remember what happened to Jack, but he's still with us. I must, I write to Jack quite a lot, so I'd like to go and ask him if he can put me wise.
That's all right, but these are some of the people you were in cruise with at the time. Yeah. And who's your co-driver? You don't know. It's not on your notes.
I think Tocky Pender was still there.
Your original co-driver?
Yeah.
Now, this new crew, was it as happy as your old crew had been? It sounds like not, but...
Very much the same. They were just... I think they were... And you could say they were just happy as well.
Despite you not having quite such a good time with Shaw?
No.
Now, what happened next day then? Because the battle went on for quite a while. There was another attack on the 27th. We're not going to go through day by day, obviously, but there was another big attack on Sher the next day. It doesn't mention B Squadron much, but... And then they moved up onto point 112.
Yeah, and I think that was probably the day, and I'm not quite sure about that, I may be wrong, but that was quite the day when we went into a sort of sunken rain, and we were in there for quite a while, and there was quite a lot of stuff flying about.
Well, how had you got into this sunken lane?
Well, that's something I've got against Bert Shaw. He shouldn't have got in there in the first place, but...
How did it happen?
We were crossing a boggy bit. I thought it was a boggy bit, and I wasn't quite sure, but I couldn't see much, but... The tank wasn't operating too well, but we got out of it somehow. And I think we went into this sunken lane at an angle, because we tilted over and I thought we were going over.
And this is when, you think this is during the operations, not around Sher, but around point 112?
This was probably the day after the Alistair copped it on the...
So this would still be looking at Sher.
Yeah.
And what happened? How did you get out of the sunken lane?
Well, we didn't. It got dark. It was pretty near the end of the day. We'd been at it all day, and it was shivering about from one place to another. And we were very lucky. One or two tanks got hit there. I think C Squadron got a pretty bad. And... we were in this sunken lane, and next thing I heard was we can't get out backwards. Every time I reversed backwards, the tracks went up the side of this thing and spun, and there was danger of us losing a track. I'm not quite sure. I think we all panicked a bit. I'm sure we did, because Bertshaw immediately said, we bailed out. And that was when we had to cross this little field in the dark.
Now, when you bailed out, there's a story for what happened to Andy Mathers. Can you tell us about that?
He jumped into what he thought was a slip fence, but it was rather unsavoury.
What was it?
It was a little... probably a German latrine. Could have been something like that. We don't really know, but he was certainly smelly.
And what did you do? You'd got out of the tank.
Yeah. And then we started to crawl over. There was a bit of panic. You can't deny the fact that we were all a bit worried about where we were. We thought we were in the German lines, we didn't. But apparently we weren't. So we... every tank soldier, I don't know, I suppose every infantry soldier as well, had almost had his eating irons in his top pocket, ready for this. That was something he always had prepared to, you know, have a meal if he could. So we got to this, we crawled across this field until we came to this round object that Bert stopped us all dead and said, I've come across a teller mine. Funny enough, it wasn't any reason why a teller mine should be there in the middle of the field. Anyway, he got his knife out, his dinner knife out, and started to prod all around looking for a detonator. But he didn't find one, and then suddenly felt this handle on the top. Now, a teller mine doesn't have a handle, it has a wee circular protruding bit at the top. So we discovered then that it was a small dustbin lid that had been left there. So anyway, we all had a good laugh at that and went on. And this is the point where I can't just remember how we spent the night sitting smoking someplace and thinking that we didn't go that way and we didn't go that way because we might be walking into the enemy, you see. So I think we sat and smoked all our cigarettes all night. The next morning, we started to move again and we came to this two or three chaps, infantry, I think they were, cooking in a big square Dixie of Maponities on a stove. And they had enough to give us a wee bit. And it was quite friendly, sort of. And this recovery vehicle came down the road and was towing a knocked out honey tank. And he gave us a lift and we got back to an LAD. And from there we got back to the regiment. I don't think John Gilmer was very pleased with us.
What did he say?
Thought you were missing and been taken prisoner or something. I don't know what he said to Sergeant Shaw. Maybe he got a bit of a telling off. Because we shouldn't have bailed out, I don't think.
And was the tank recovered?
Yeah, next morning it was recovered.
And was that... Nothing had happened to it?
Not really, no. It was in a position where it had to be manhandled out of the something rain.
So it was, I mean, you couldn't have got it out, no, as it was. But no. You think you should have stayed with it and guarded it, yeah, probably?
I think we could probably have got it out. I don't know. It was dark, you see.
Now, what's the next thing you remember? I mean, would the next thing be 112, the move across to 112?
Probably was.
Because that was round about the 30th, about two or three days later.
After Shaw, we got pulled out for a wee while. I think we got two or three days sort of rest period, maintenance and...
Now, is that between Shaw and Point 112, or between Point 112 and...
After Shaw, somebody came up and took over. Whether it was the 23rd Hussars or the 3rd Tank, I'm not sure. But somebody came up and took over, and we got back to have a rest period for a wee while.
I'm just wondering whether that's the rest period before Goodwood rather than the rest period before 0.112.
Oh, it's before 112. Goodwood was later.
Okay, that's right. And during this rest period, had by then you'd been talking to each other, had anyone noticed that the Shermans caught fire rather easily?
Yeah, well, we all knew that.
When did you found that out? Because you said you hadn't seen any, you know. When did you first realise?
Well, even before we went over, we knew that there weren't they were likely to be easy to catch fire.
Why? Could you explain why?
I don't know. Once had probably got back from the first. I don't know whether they were, the Grant was a similar design as the Sherman, and they were in the desert. They were prone to going on fire as well. There was a suspicion this anyway, but then we didn't. The Germans called them Bronson Burners or something, I don't know. They thought they were. They even thought they were ready to go on fire, easy to go on fire.
Why did they catch fire so easily, do you know?
The petrol tank was so vulnerable, right behind the turret, and let's face it, the armour on the side wasn't all that thick. And the 88mm, in fact, I think the 75mm shell would go right through. In fact, the first brewed up tank we saw as we went after Cully, where we had a clean hole in the turret and a hole out the other side, so you can imagine. And then you see this gun that the Germans had was a menace, really fast. It was a very, very powerful.
The 88?
88.
Was it well known at the time?
Yeah, I think it was well known, yeah. It was an anti-aircraft gun, really, you see. And it was somebody in Germany had decided that it was a good anti-tank gun as well, and that was it. I wish they'd kept it as an anti-aircraft gun.
Was it noticeably better than anything else?
Yes, it was, yeah. It was so noticeable that it was one of the things that you got scared of, shall we say, when anybody that came up on the wireless that there was either a Tiger or an anti-tank 88 in the vicinity. I mean, it was a tank stopper, really.
Now, so you had this brief period of rest, and then you went back in line, presumably when they went up on Hill 112.
Yeah, yeah.
And that would be about the 30th. Yeah. Well, that's when the Sea Squadron went on.
We thought when we went up on the Hill 112 that we would be there for a while. We were told, actually, that we would to hold that position. You see, so we'd be there for a while. And we thought, we'll do a wee bit of housework. So we dug a pit, maybe a couple of feet deep, and drove the tank over this pit and lined it with the bivvy, and we had a comfortable little house under there. And we thought, well, this is going to be nice for 4 or 5 days. And we just got it finished, and the next day orders were to move. So we lost that little bit of domesticity.
Was there any actual fighting while you were on the hill?
Yeah, I never saw much, really. But there was. The infantry could be getting blasted blasted, and you would never really know, because we were encased in a steel cabinet with a pair of tight-fitting earphones on your head, and all you heard was what came in over the air. I don't think we were aware of the seriousness of the situation there, but we just knew that we were told to get out when we got out.
Do you remember the evacuation?
Yeah, I can remember that, yeah.
How was it done?
Going through a little village, and I've been back to that village, actually, on a walk tour.
Which one was it?
You've got me there.
Not Norrie or
I was heading to Hill 112. I should know it.
Norrie and Besson?
It's probably in the book.
Yeah, we'll not worry too much. Sort that out.
No, but that's all I can remember, going through this little village.
Did you come under fire while you were...
No. There's a place where we got... I think it might have been on the way on Hill 112 where we got machine guns by American Thunderbolts. Because we hadn't put out enough orange smoke. I mean, when the aircraft were about, you were supposed to identify yourself with a grenade of orange smoke, which you put out. Well, apparently we didn't put out that at this particular time when the Americans came across, and they were pretty trigger happy, and the machine gunned us.
Did it do any damage?
No, very little. I think there was one or two slightly wounded, but not much.
Now, what's the next thing you remember then? There seemed to be a period where you sort of going backwards and forwards before.
After that.
Anything before Goodwood come to mind?
No. I remember watching the 100 air raid on Cap Pipi Aerodrome, and the sky again was black with Lancasters, and I remember seeing a very sad thing when one of them got shot down. It wasn't a very nice thing. That was when we were on Hill 112. So where we went after that, I'm not very sure.
So the next really big thing would be Goodwood. Now, at this point, were you in a 75mm tank, or were you in a... Whose crew were you in at Goodwood, and which tank were you in?
I was in a Firefly at this time. I don't know how it changed, how we swapped over, but I kept the crew. I was with Andy Mathers and Bert Shaw.
Now, could you describe a Firefly? What was so special about it? Because it was the 17-pounder, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, there was less accommodation in it, shall we say, because of the size of the ammunition. I mean, the shell was probably nearly 3 feet in length because it had this extra charge, you see, give it velocity. And the co-driver's seat was non-existent because it was... There was shells all sitting upright in that. There wasn't much difference otherwise from the driver's point of view. It was the same controls and everything. So there was no real difference there.
And whose troop? Were you still in... Was it 4 troop?
I can't remember whether it was still in 4 or 2. Because it was in 2 for a wee while.
Do you know who your officer was?
No, I can't remember the officer.
Do you remember who your officers were rather than the general? I mean, who the lieutenants were? There was Webster you mentioned. What was he like? Or is that later?
I lost touch with him. He was a portrait officer in England, but I don't think he went over with us.
And you don't know who it was?
No. Right. You don't have much contact with them once you got into action.
Now, what about Operation Goodwood? I mean, that was on the 18th of July, but there was a big move, because you swung round, didn't you? What do you remember of the move round?
Well, I should say, fortunate, because I was way behind. The 17-pounder was often left way behind, because it was... only called upon when there was any real need, for instance a tiger or something needed to come up. The general tendency was that you were always behind, and I can only remember the railway line, crossing the railway line.
What about the move too? You don't remember the drive there, because you swung right across the battlefield, didn't you?
Yeah, I only remember the forming up.
Where was that? Was that the glider field?
Just outside Clan it was. I'm a bit hazy about that battle because it was chaos.
Okay, so just tell it as you saw it. You were driving the Firefly and you were in reserve.
Yeah.
And what happened?
Well, I remember seeing some of the boys coming back from it. They'd been brewed up and they were coming back. And one or two of them looked as if nothing had happened to them. They looked like, you know, others were a wee bit demoralised, but I can't remember what happened on the actual day of Goodwood.
Did you not go into action at all? Or
no. We didn't.
So your Firefly was kept in reserve and just didn't go in?
No.
And what about the state of the return? You know, some were in good state, but there were so many casualties. I mean, how did that affect the unit?
Well, I can't give you the statistics. They're all down in the book. We lost 3/4 of our tank. And I remember being in this sort of a cathedral or a monastery or something. It was a monastery.
That's a couple of days later. Yeah. Arden Abbey, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
So did you move forward as far as the first railway line? No. So you just didn't go forward at all, right? What about the bombing raid that night? Were you there then? Because the glider field where they were was bombed.
I saw the gliders, my memory doesn't...
That's okay.
Yeah. We were a bit overawed, shall we say, at the whole thing at that particular point. It was the first real battle, a tank battle that took place in the whole business, because it was a terrain was conducive to tank fighting, really.
It wasn't
open so much. So,
but as you say, you didn't go in.
No.
It's not one of your battles, sort of thing. The next day, you don't remember the bombing raid particularly. The next day, the regiment was reorganised into two squadrons, A and C, and Joe Powell was killed, or Powell. Do you remember that? Were you anywhere near when Powell was killed? Because he was killed when some shells landed, I think, after a briefing.
I think Powell was killed in the bombing raid that night. I mean, that night the Germans dropped what we call chandeliers, and they were parachute things that lit up the whole battlefield, and then they started bombing us. And I can remember I got under. I was near a recovery vehicle, a tank, a recovery tank, and I got under there, and everybody that could possibly squeeze under a vehicle was under one. It was a hellish raid. It was a pretty hefty raid, and there was a lot of casualties then. A bomb landed fairly near that vehicle I was under, and some of the shrapnel or something went through between the bogies, and anybody who had probably their bottom sticking up on them got a bruise of it. Two of my mates got wounded there, Johnny Murray and Jimmy Fraser. These were the two that I pal about with. With no tanks, you see, and we were going about despondently, shall we say, at that time. It was a bad affair. Goodwood was one of the worst battles in the World War.
I was wondering.